Report. All right, you ready?
Ready.
All right, here we go. So, we're going to call this Conversations with Todd and Sudsy, or Beyond the Court with Todd and Sudsy. Today's topic, the next generation of men's pros? Question mark. So, first off, I'm going to transcribe this into a story. So, we're not using this audio except for using transcription. So we don't have to do like a proper intro, but Sudsy, how you doing?
Doing good, Todd. Driving my real job, work.
Yeah, I'm on lunch break from my real job, so this works out for both of us. This is the
But
story I'm talking about.
we both love racquetball so much that we can't help it.
That's right. So here's the context of today's conversation. Are we seeing the next generation of pros? And what is this within the conversation of does it matter based on the state of our sport? So when I did the recap of last weekend's Shamrock Shootout, I noted that a ton of U21 or junior world champions were on site. And just to run through them real quick, we had reigning U21 champion Joel Alexis Acha. You had the World 21 semifinalist Trujillo and Barrios. You had the USA U21 champion, Benjamin Horner. You had the reigning U18 champ in Jonathan Flores, who made a huge impact. We're going to talk about him in a sec. You also had the likes of Sendri Mendoza and Herrera Jr., who are top junior national players in the US. You had top Mexicans like Gastelum here. And you had a couple of a little bit older, but also former junior world champions. Former Bolivians, now turned Argentinians, Miranda and Garcia. Well, that's a lot of a lot of U21 players, and a lot of them are starting to get real results on tour. So the question I have for you, Sudsy, is this the next generation of talent on tour?
First, it's funny how former Bolivian turned Argentinian. It's funny how that works. I'd like to do it some investigative reporting.
Yeah, right.
It's interesting. I think clearly you just named a bunch of really talented players. But the thing that jumps out at me, Todd, is that you didn't name nearly as many Americans. And, it's clear that the level of play of these players, the South Americans, the Mexicans, Central Americans, it's so much greater right now than what we have to offer, and that's something that really bugs me. That hurts my soul, but it is what it is. And clearly, I guess in anything, when you say next generation, I think that's connected to the age, right? You said 21U, so it has to be. For us traditionally, when do we start to see a difference of okay, that's different than what we're seeing at a current level for is the player's ability. But historically, I think you would agree, a few times we've seen that at like 18 and 19 years old, right?
Yeah.
Would you agree with that? I mean, where you go, okay, that's different. And then when they get into the 20s, it's kind of like, well, we're not really seeing much different now. Now they're kind of in the mix. So like I'm looking at who's 17, 18, 19 that's different. There's no doubt that, again, next generation to me is defined by, well, just aging out. So, yeah, I mean, next generation based on your age, you're the next generation. Will they develop into the players they can be? Because you know how you develop, Todd? You got to be out there on the court. You got to be playing tournaments. You got to be playing events. And you can't do it in your hometown, home city, home country. First thing I did when I got to Ecuador was I said, let me see the budget. You guys got to get out of here. You got to get out and you got to play other players. You got to deal with other game styles, adversity, uncomfortableness. And there's no doubt it's the quote unquote next generation, but how would you define next generation?
Well, I mean, I think so. Just by necessity, if you look at the players who have been ranked in the top 10, or the top 8 as of late, I mean, I'll just run through them real quick. Kane's at the end of last season. Kane was 43. Conrado was 29. Adam Mania 29. Sam Murray's 31. Rodrigo 28. Andres Acuña 29. Jake's 33. Even someone who we think is kind of younger, and Eduardo Portillo. He was 25 at the end of last season, and he's already turned 26. These are not the young kids. These are not 22-year-olds kind of flowing through. And so The tour has been dominated by players in that are kind of getting old. Natera is 29, Martel is 32, Thomas Carter is 28. These are the players that you see day in and day out reaching the quarter semis. Where are the young guns? And that's kind of what was I thought was notable about the just the total volume of young players in Chicago.
Yeah, it was great, and I think that we as a sport, Todd, it has turned into, and I would counsel the young guys, take advantage of it while you can now, because those guys and players you just said, they need to really start considering how are they going to parlay their racquetball career into what's next, right? Like, is it sustainable for a 33-year-old to continue to travel around trying to be a professional racquetball player? With that, I mean, I have no nobody I, there's nobody I have more confidence in than, if Keith Miner's behind the new IRT movement and Adam's doing a great job. But at the end of the day, I think it's turning into a young man's game. Now that seems like, though, a little opposite of what you just said, right? So I think that the younger generation certainly need to focus and kind of maximize the time because it's quick. It doesn't last a long time. I think the question is, when do you really start seeing those guys you just mentioned, the mid-20s and up, say, it's time for me to look at what's next?
Well, I think you already
So,
see. I think you already see it. So, we know Montoya has an engineering degree. Same with Javier Marr. Who they those two have almost ne they've been top players for a while, but they don't tour. They don't tour full time. We know Eduardo Portilla,
well,
who.
there's not enough stops right now. I mean, you gotta, if the IRT is successful, the first thing they're gonna do is release like double digit tour stops. That's a great start. If we see that happen, then that's a great start, especially for the younger generation. But when you say they don't tour, I mean, how many stops were there last year?
I mean, that's a good point. There were only six stops last year.
Yeah, I mean,
Six
Mark Frank and
stops.
I, we played more local events.
No, that's a good point. And another, I mean, another, kind of pivoting a little bit, almost every one of these top U21 players we mentioned is from South America. So for them
Right.
to get to the United States, I mean, you tell me. How long of a flight is it from Buenos Aires or from the middle of Bolivia to get up here so they can even compete?
Yeah, it's a full day. It's a full day of travel. I mean, you said Argentina, it's going to take you just to get to Miami and then from Miami go wherever. That's 8 or 9 hours. From Bolivia, same thing, 7 or 8 hours. Not to mention, depending on the city you're from within that South American country, you might have to make a connection. It's a full day of travel. I did it from Ecuador for seven years. And we were actually a lot closer, or it was easier. For me from Ecuador, because one of the major airports went right to Miami. That was wheels up, wheels down in about 4 hours. But within the country, I still had a 3 hour drive to get to that airport. So it's a full day. The biggest benefit that these players have, Todd, is their governments financially support them. They use the tour. Now, I don't know how many people know this. The tour is actually used as a training slash practice platform. All these international countries, they are more interested in the medals at the international events. Pan American Championships, World Championships, Pan Am Games, World Games. That is more valuable to them in country. And they use the tour, both IRT and LPRT, as training mechanisms to prepare them for those.
That's so what you just said is absolutely consistent with conversations I've had with the previous commissioner, Pablo Farge. I won't name names, but there was a couple of seasons ago, we were looking at the end of the season rankings, and it was going to be really close as to who won, right? And there was an international player who's prominently involved, and if that person did really well, they could have finished number one. Pablo told me that that player had no, not only did that player have no idea where he stood, he couldn't have cared less whether he
Correct.
finished number one on the Pro Tour because exactly what you just said. His country, his federation, and his priorities were winning worlds, winning Pan Am games, winning park, and then winning whatever other regional or, and then if he happened to come up and take home 4 grand for winning a pro tour, 4 grand is the equivalent of like 3 months' wages in Bolivia, then that was great too. But that's kind of an interesting mindset for people in this country, I think.
It's a fact. I mean, you know me. I played my whole career. It was all about professional titles, right? It was about that. In fact, we the era of the Cliff, the Sudsies, the Ellises, the Meninos, I can go on and on. We didn't do the international thing. Rocky was the only one that did it, and he openly admits he did it for the health insurance.
Yeah.
But whereas, and I'm telling you, this is what we just said. Like a U.S. Open title was less valuable to these countries than a bronze medal at one of the international events, because that's how their government funded based on results at the international events.
Yeah. I mean, so that puts a different spin or a different color on why some of these, why you see international participation in some of these tournaments. So another side note, oftentimes you'll see a pro event, whether it's an IRT or an LPRT event, and you'll see like the entire Guatemala national team there suddenly, right? This weekend in Chicago, you didn't see a single Guatemalan player there that I can remember. And it's because their federation chooses to send the team to get practice for an upcoming international game.
Correct. Exactly how it works. So when I had the Ecuadorian racquetball budget, we get a budget at the beginning of the year from their Olympic Committee, and then we pick and choose the events we're going to go to use as training platforms. That's it, period.
Yeah.
So they just didn't choose this one for this one.
Right.
But
All right,
yeah,
I'm going to ask.
that's exactly.
Sorry. I'm going to
Go
ask you
ahead. That's exactly how it works.
a sorry, Sudsy. I'm going to ask you a different, more difficult question. We have, if the next generation is predominantly Bolivian and Mexican, how can they flourish if there's no pro events in Bolivia or Mexico?
That's their biggest obstacle. They need to be able to get out. But here's the thing, Todd. Getting out used to be coming to the US or Canada because we were the best. They don't have to do that now. They can go around South America, Mexico, Central America, and deal with better players. The travel and getting out is what will help them and create them to be more well-rounded to have to deal with, being uncomfortable, right? Like take Conrado. Conrado is a rock star superstar in his little country and little city in Bolivia, and like he's in his comfort zone.
Yeah.
But when he gets out and comes out here, it's very different. So, if they don't have enough travel events, and I do think rumor has it there might be a planned international professional event or not. I don't know yet. We'll wait and see. Hopefully the IRT is making that happen. They still will do that internally, so they'll pick and choose where to go, when to go, and how to go. But still, yeah, I think it'd be great if there were more events. I think it'd be great for for the IRT, for the LPRT, and they're working behind the scenes to do that. But you know who it really hurts too? Hurts our players, our next generation.
Yeah. I mean, we talked about our
I
next
mean,
generation. There was four good examples playing in Chicago. And that was Cole Sendri, DJ Mendoza, who were both on the 18U national championship team that played in the last Worlds. Plus you had U21 champ, reigning champ Benjamin Horner. And we also had a lesser known player who played in 18Us and high schools this year, Juan Herrera Jr. They're not the only top juniors that get out and about. There's other names out there, especially in the NorCal area where you have like Prasad and Nikhil and players like that who are winning junior national titles but almost never travel. What is the impact? I mean, those we're not talking about those players right now as being pushing for top 10 spots. We're talking about Trujillo, who's ranked in the top 10. We're talking about Gastelum and Miranda, who show up and get wins. And eventually, we're going to talk about in a moment, Jonathan Flores, who looks like he might be the next big thing. What's going on with US juniors here?
Yeah, we're well behind, and I think it started years ago. And Todd, I mean, you followed my career somewhat, or Kane's, or the results speak for themselves. Like, you gotta go win. At the end of the day, if you're not winning gold medals when you go internationally, you're not the best player in the world. You're not even close. So I would say, and I don't know all the results, but like, are we as USA juniors winning gold medals and championships and matches? I think we're a little bit too much of, oh, you're doing great, like kind of mediocrity, and like that's acceptable. But at the, like, who's winning? That's what I want to see. Who are the gold medalists? Those are the next best players. Are our players doing everything in their power to be the best they can be, or the next best player in the world? And then it goes back to, well, what's their motivation? USA isn't funding them, right? Like, if the US Olympic Committee said, hey, Cole and DJ, if you guys go win a gold medal at the Junior Worlds, we're going to pay you a couple thousand a month, give you health insurance, be on Team USA, maybe they would be more inclined, or have the ability, the resources to do everything in their power to wake up every day. And maybe they're doing that anyway, and maybe just the talent, it's just there's a gap right now because of the years of these other countries doing it, right?
No, I
But
mean, yeah, 100%. I, you know, and I don't want to.
it's not that close right now. The
No.
names you're saying, and you could fill in the gaps, like, I know we're you're quoting me, but like, you can fill in the gaps with a handful of those names at the same ages, and I would say, well, just look at the results. Where are we at in the podium?
Yeah, no, that's a good point. All right, one more player I want to talk about is Jonathan Flores, Bolivian, two-time 18U world defending champion. I'm just going to read you a couple of some of his recent exploits. He's now played a handful of pro events. I'm going to start a year ago in Minneapolis. He shows up, he flies in, and he plays the Hall of Fame event 2024, loses in 32s to Jake Bredenbach. Since
Hello.
that point, sorry. So,
Yeah, I'm sorry. I'm going through a dead zone, so.
okay. So 2 weeks later, he enters the Lombard event in 2024, beats Jake 5-7, turns around, beats Robbie Collins in the 16s, takes a game off of Kane before he loses 11-7 in the tiebreaker. This is in 2024. He goes, we don't see him again. He wins Junior Worlds 18U without too much trouble, shows back up here. And now here he is again to play Minnesota and Chicago in 2025. Here's what he did. Shows up in Minnesota, beats Javier Marr, loses 11-10 to Andre Pereira in the 16s. A week later, he's in Chicago. He beats Diego Gastelum easily. Then in the 16s, he trashes the number four seed, Alan Natera, 9-6, faces Andre Pereira again, beats him 15-4 the first game. And then had the match on his racket and loses another 11-10 to Andre in a match that, as I wrote, and I think that you believe, he really should have won. What do you make of Jonathan Flores?
How old is he?
He's just finished his 18U season, so he's playing in his age 19 year.
Yeah, so one other time in the history of my career did I ever look at a player and say, that's different. And that was about Kane Wasilenchuk. Saw him at when he was 18, 19 in Chicago. And Cliff said, hey, take a look at this kid. What do you see? I watched about 5 points of Kane, and I said, that's different. He reminds me of us. That was my exact quote, Todd. And I've never said that about any player in the history of the sport, except Kane. Flores, from what I see with my eye and experience right now today, after a healthy Kane and Conrado, is the most talented, best all-around player in the sport, period. Now, does that mean he's the third-ranked player in the world? No. I think that all things being equal, weapons, tools, ability, he's got it. What I don't know, does he have a dog in him? Is he a fighter? Is he tenacious? Does he have balls? As far as skill, ability, talent, he's on a different level. Now, let's not forget Daniel, right? But Daniel just isn't playing right now.
Yeah.
Jonathan Flores is, all things being equal, once he learns how to play, how to win and close those matches out, he's the most talented player in the world after the first two guys I just said. I just don't know if his DNA is made up to now go put it all together.
I agree. And then going back, of course, to the first part of this conversation, he lives in Bolivia, so he's facing a day-long flight every time he wants to get up here. You know, those flights are not cheap. And is he going to have the same, you know, kind of priorities as Moscoso? You know, is it more important for Flores to win Pan American Racquetball Championship versus come up here every time there's a pro event and try to win? I guess it remains to be seen, but what I worry about is exactly that. I worry that all these Bolivians, and I lump the likes of Garcia and Miranda in there as well, even though they are now represent Argentina or Argentina, for the same reason. You know, are they
Can I
interested?
represent Poland? I'm going to go represent Poland playing a tournament.
Hey, you
I am
could,
Polish.
yeah.
Filipino? I'm Filipino too.
I mean, who was it that Woody Klaus represented one
Woody
year?
Klaus. Small country in Africa.
Eritrea? Eritrea? I can't remember.
I don't know. You're a better speller and much smarter than me. You tell me.
Well, anyway, so that's what I wanted to talk about today, Sudsy. Any parting words before you crash your car?
No, I think it's great. I think this will be fun. Maybe we can do a series of these types of conversations, Todd. I think there's a ton of great talent and players. Hopefully the IRT keeps doing what they need to do, and LPRT, you know, we didn't even talk about that, but I'm sure we'll have many topics to discuss in the future, to really showcase these players, you know, and see truly who is or who will be the next best players in the world. Because until Kane Wasilenchuk hangs up his racket and sneakers, it's still not close. So
I agree.
I would love to see what's next. And I would tell a lot of these young guys that, you know, if that's what they want, you know, they need to do everything in their power to make sure that they can reach that goal. And I know these countries support them. And if that's training and coaching and getting out and playing, do that. But again, Todd, you and I both know we don't know what they're made of. It's easy to hit a ball, get a ball, see ball, but like, what are you made of when the dust settles and you know you got to go to a dark place to try to get to that finish line? And but I'm telling you, when I saw Flores, I was watching, you know, one of the top three players in the world in the moment, and he didn't even win that match. So whatever that tells you.
Sounds good. All right. Thanks, Sudsy. Drive safe.
Thanks, bud.